darlings. I'm Charlize, the founder of online storytelling platform Girls Will Be Boys, and this is Say It With Your Chest, a podcast which aims to shine light on the corners of important conversations which are so often missed out of the media or seen as taboo. This Girls Will Be Boys podcast offers you an opportunity to enter different people's worlds, share unfiltered conversations, and encourage our guests to say it with their chest.
There were times where I would meet up with someone and they would be like, oh, you're a lot bigger in real life. And I'm like, but you knew this. And like the run up to us meeting, I kept having to remind you, oh, by the way, I'm fat. You're still subscribing to the sexualized sort of curvy shape as opposed to just having curvy bodies of all shapes and sizes. Because he's mixed race, there was an element of, oh my gosh, Steph, he's so attractive. How did you get him?
Today's episode is with the wonderful Steph. Would you like to introduce yourself and what you do?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Stephanie Yeboah and I am an author, freelance journalist, content creator, podcast host, and just someone online that just talks a lot about things.
Oh, I feel you. I'm literally the same. Like when you reel off a list of things and you're like, actually, I just chat shit online
basically,
about things that I care about.
Yeah.
It's the best way forward.
Yeah, basically.
Well, you're incredible. About everything that you do. I literally, especially your book, I said I really struggled to read. Soon as that came in the post, I was like, right, page is done. It was so good.
Oh,
it was
thank you so much.
I think when like you have a connection to someone, then it's a lot easier to get into their story. But anyways, we can get into that later. Yeah. So I just want to start off, what are your pronouns and what do you identify as gender-wise?
Yeah, so my pronouns are she, her.
Perfect. Same for me. Well, she, her, she, they. So today's episode, you know, I've been wanting to talk to you for a long, long time.
It's a long time coming.
It really is. We're going to talk about the wonderful world of desirability politics. Long sigh.
Exasperated sigh.
Literally.
There's a lot.
There really is a lot. I'm going to get straight into it.
Yeah.
So when was the first time you feel like you were made aware of desirability politics?
I think the first time I was made aware of that was probably when I was eight. When I was six.
Oh my God.
It's a very old memory, but it really stuck in my brain because I remember it was Valentine's Day and I was in primary school and there was this guy that I really liked called Zach. I don't care about baiting him out. I don't really care. Like, I still have beef because of that day.
Gosh.
And I remember I was really into arts and craft at the time. So I made like this really lovely Valentine's Day card and like put hearts and glitter and all of that kind of stuff. It was amazing. Anyway, on the day I went into to primary school and I gave it to him. Mm. And I probably made the mistake of giving it to him in front of his friends while his friends were there.
Ugh.
And he opened the card, he read it, he tore it in two, he stepped on it and he was like, I never want to go out with you, you fat pig. And I was like, okay, this is what heartbreak feels like. I just felt my heart just like break in two in my chest.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. So that, I think that was the first time that I was like, why is this person using my physicality as a means to insult me? And so that was, I think, the first time that I really started to associate fatness with like negativity, because not only did he kind of make a dig at that, but moving forward, as I went into secondary school, I started, like, the majority of my bullying was to do with my weight and how undesirable I was or would be because of that.
Mm.
And so, yeah, it was a really young age that it started.
Well, I feel like when you have, like, the added layers of, like, marginalization, it's just, where do you go from there? Especially when the experience starts from such a young age. Like, because especially I feel like desirabilities, well, dating, personally, for me, it's like dark-skinned black woman, I feel like is the hardest thing to navigate with desirability politics. Like,
absolutely.
I mean, obviously, I'm wifeyed up now, but like my experience in the past. So the fact that it actually started with a dating situation with you at that age, where do you go from there? When were you able to put a label on the fact that this is to do with desirability politics?
I think it was when I was in secondary school. So that was where, you know, we were all sort of blooming into teenagers. People were starting to go out, like each other, have, you know, their first kisses and all of that kind of stuff. And I just remember always being like the one looking at everybody else, you know, coupling up and getting into relationships. And I was such a late bloomer, and it just felt like everybody around me was being coupled up. And so at the time, back then, it was trendy to be with girls that were light skinned or lighties. Even that phrase, like, and it was just the cool thing to be with like light skinned girls. And so being fat and dark skinned, it really got to me to the point where I actually started like bleaching my skin, because I was like, well, I'm plus size and I'm dark, but which one can I perhaps eradicate more? Which one will make the bullying perhaps a bit worse? Which one would be quicker for me to eradicate so that I could be a bit more desirable? And at the time, I wasn't looking to go to the like to do PE and all of that kind of stuff. I was like, no, I can't. I'm not. I don't have the will.
That's a no from me.
At all. And because I used to get like bullied in PE and stuff, so I was like, I'm not doing that. So yeah, like there was like a local corner shop near my area, like a hair and beauty shop, and they sold bleaching creams that had like mercury and stuff in it, like the real bad stuff. And so as a like, I think I was 14? Yeah, I would go to buy the creams. It would be under the table type stuff. So he would have to like take it out, he would sell it to me. And then I started bleaching for like a year until it got to the point where my skin was starting to have a really bad effect with it. So like my skin started to go, I wasn't like the caramel colored that I thought I would have. No, it was looking like, yeah, it was like gray and like marble. It was just not cool. Like my skin was having a really bad reaction to it. And I just wasn't going, like turning the color that I thought I needed to be. And so I stopped doing it. And over time, because with skin bleaching, it's something you have to do forever, like to maintain as long as you want to be light. And so after about a year, I stopped. And then over the course of like 3 to 6 months, my skin color slowly returned to normal. So it wasn't like a huge change, but the change that I could see, I could tell it was going down a dark path. And it was at that point where I was like, that was when it was cemented in my head through school and through media as well, was that being light is the key to being desirable. Because even in school, like there were other plus size girls in school, but they were mixed race and they never got bullied, like never. They were like very popular and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So that was when I kind of like associated perhaps my darkness with, oh, maybe this is what makes me like super undesirable or ugly or whatever. So
how did your family react to you skin bleaching? Were they aware of like...
They weren't aware, because like coming from like Ghana, it's such a common thing. So growing up, I would see these creams in my mum's, like in the bathroom. She would have it in, you know, she didn't bleach, but she would, if she got like a scar or like a dark mark or hyperpigmentation, she would use it just to fade that area so that it would even out. So we were so used to seeing it in the household, and I don't even think, yeah, she never questioned me on it. So I don't even think she noticed. My dad didn't notice. So
did you ever talk to them about how you felt about the color of your skin?
No, I didn't tell my parents anything about how I felt in myself emotionally. Again, they weren't really the most emotionally open parents. So I didn't really talk to them about stuff concerning me until I was in like my mid 20s. So I kind of just kept everything inside and just kind of dealt with it.
Yeah. No, I can understand that. I feel like with parents or like grandparents, there's certain things that they just don't understand. Like I've tried to have conversations, or even if I just mention like to my nan that I'm in therapy, she's like, what do you need therapy for? And it's like,
yeah,
I can understand where there's that like separation generation wise and feeling like you can't actually, even though they're in the same position of like, I'm in the same skin color, you can't actually like talk to them about it because they won't see it as the issue that.
Yeah. They just get on with it, don't they? All they've had to do is like, just keep calm and move on type thing. So yeah, they don't understand that there are actually ways that you can help yourself mental health wise. So
when do you feel like you sort of like, in terms of dating, when did you start dating and how was it navigating that, being aware of your first experience of dating?
When did I start? I want to say when I was maybe 22. 3. So I was a late bloomer. Just because all throughout college and uni, I was pretty much invisible. I just kind of kept my head down and kept to work and wasn't really that sociable. So I think after I graduated was when I kind of dipped a toe in the field of dating. And at that time it was predominantly like online dating. And yeah, it was just very tragic. it was horrible. I'm not gonna lie, like online dating world is
brutal.
It's a jungle out there. Like yeah. it's from being fetishized to people just saying really horrible things. You know, one of the positives is that I did meet my first boyfriend on like one of those sites. But like even after that relationship, navigating dating was just really weird and horrible because I always felt like I had to put disclaimers on websites like, oh, by the way, I'm fat, or like, oh, by the way, well, not by the way, I'm dark skin, because they could see it, but in terms of like weight stuff, even though I made myself very visible with regards to putting, you know, full length photos and things like that, there were times where I would meet up with someone and they would be like, oh, you're a lot bigger in real life, like they'd say it to me and I'm like, but you knew this. And like the run up to us meeting, I kept having to remind you, oh, by the way, I'm fat, or by the way, like, and it's so annoying that we sometimes feel like we have to make our way a disclaimer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, just a lot of like fetishizing things, a lot of stories there.
No, I've seen like videos or like TikToks of people, like plus people saying, that's their experience with dating, like having to really be meticulous with the pictures they put up and make sure they look quote unquote as big as they actually are, because they can't bother with turning up to the date and being rejected because of that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've also seen that the stories of that flying around, which I can imagine can't be very nice at all.
But it's a weird one as well, because again, it's like, also, even being plus size, it's so tied into like this concept of having to perform femininity as well, because it's like being seen as plus size from the outside, some people already feel it's quite a masculine thing to be. And so it's like, okay, I'm going to take a picture and be as look as big as I am in real life, but then also I have to like hold myself in a specific way so that I look like I've got an hourglass figure, or I don't want to look like I'm too big on top, or I don't want to look like I'm too intimidating or too masculine looking sometimes. And it's a really weird kind of thing to navigate. And that's only hearing feedback from other guys that I've, like stupid feedback, obviously, from guys that I've gone on dates with, who liken being dark skinned and being plus size to being masculine. And being dark skinned, we all know that unfortunately there are these stereotypes that the darker you are, the more aggressive you are, the more masculine you are, the more further away from femininity you are. And it's such a mind game, like trying to navigate that and just show up as your best self when everyone is putting all of these stereotypes and things on you and causing you to sometimes doubt your own sense of self-worth sometimes. So yeah, you kind of battle against that with a lot of some of the dating scope, which is just annoying.
Yeah, I want to touch on the figure thing, because I've had plenty of conversations where I've picked up on the fact that the argument for, you know, inclusivity getting better is like all shapes and sizes, when actually, well, first of all, the sizes is, it's not giving. Like the sizes are still stopping at the smaller end.
Yeah.
But no one talks about shapes. Yeah. And I feel like that's heavily tied into desirability politics. And that's something that I had struggled with, because not to be all woe is me, because I'm not actually like, I'm not seen in the world as plus size. And I understand the privilege with that. But the shape thing, along with the masculinity of being dark skinned, along with having a shaved head, is something that I've found, even to this day, I still struggle with, because I feel like desirability politics are heavily tied to a certain shape. And when you don't have that shape on top of other things, I just want to know how you find navigating self-love when you know that that is an added thing in desirability politics that is working against you.
I hate it, because not everybody has hips, you know? Not everyone has hips. Not everyone has a bum. Not everyone has that extreme hourglass figure. And like when you're black as well, I think there's an automatic expectation that you have to have that body type, because that's the body type that, fair play, like a lot stereotypically, or maybe just within our phenotype, we're more naturally aligned to have that figure, but not everybody has that figure. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes we get demonized for not being an extreme hourglass shape. And it's long because it's just like, okay, so what do you want me to do? When I was in uni, and I wrote this in my book, I bought butt pads because they were all the rage. I don't care, I'll embarrass myself. I really don't
it's
care.
It's not embarrassing.
Because I thought, this is like a thing that everyone seems to be doing around that time. It was like 2008. And I got them off of Amazon. And I remember going to a nightclub with some uni friends, and I was like dancing a little bit too enthusiastically, and one flew out. And you know when like you watch a comedy movie and something happens and the music just stops, it's just like rip. That's what I felt in my head, and everyone just stared at the floor, and I just slinked out through the crowd. I was like, I can't.
No, I literally have tears in my eyes. I actually can't remember that story.
I was like, how is this my life? Like, and it's like it happened in slow motion, and I was like, actually, you know what? This is actually ridiculous. What am I doing? Like,
yeah,
I'm doing all of this for what reason?
Yeah,
and. It was just, that was at the time, it was like, kind of spoke to how much I wanted to have that kind of desirable body shape, because being, again, like even in the plus size sphere, it's like there's the whole concept of being an acceptable fat. Mm-hmm. And an acceptable fat normally is somebody that has got an extreme hourglass shape or small waist, wide hips, big bum, big boobs kind of thing, flat-ish stomach.
Right.
And that is what society kind of deems as acceptable when it comes to being chubby or when it comes to being plus size, and anything outside of that is deemed as, oh, that's, you know, that's not desirable. And that's something that we see a lot when it comes to like lookbooks for fashion or mm-hmm. models and things like that, where it's like they claim to be inclusive and diverse and for all bodies, but then when we look at the body types on show, you're still subscribing to the sexualized sort of
right.
curvy shape, as opposed to just having curvy bodies of all shapes and sizes. It's still tied to that patriarchal mm-hmm. Concept of curves meaning sexy and all of that kind of stuff. And so it's still kind of, it's annoying that we're still associating that and trying to live up to a patriarchal standard and yeah, patriarchal eye when it comes to how we see ourselves. So mm-hmm. yeah, being plus size and black and it, you know, being expected to have a certain body shape and not having it really did make me feel like I was like, am I less black, or am I less, you know, am I less this? And like that, coupled with sort of where I grew up and the way I spoke and stuff, it really gave me a bit of an identity crisis at some point, because I was like, I don't feel like I'm black enough to be in this group of friends or that group of friends. And yeah, it did make me feel a bit weird when I was a teenager. Like I didn't really know where to kind of fit in.
I want to pick up on a word that you said, which is a word that my therapist pointed out makes me physically uncomfortable.
Oh, okay.
And it's sexy.
I don't really like that word either.
I don't know what it is, but that word just makes me, I can't even just say it without my whole, like, my whole physical just goes weird. And I feel like it's because of my experiences with desirability politics. And I speak about this with Sky, my fiance, all the time, because I feel like a lot of the times, okay, I'm like trying to word this in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up and not having external validation from men, even if it's like catcalling or like, you know, all that kind of stuff that obviously people hate because it's non-consensual, or just like men sliding into your DMs or sending a dick pic or whatever the fuck. At the end of the day, that is all at least some form of validation. When you don't have that.
Yeah.
And you've been invisible for so long, and you felt invisible for so long, it's almost as detrimental or more. And I don't want to sound like ungrateful for having not been like sexually assaulted a lot of the times, or like.
I feel what you're saying. But, I felt like that as well.
Right. And I feel like this is a common thing, but we don't talk about it because it's the wrong thing to say, when there are so many people suffering from those kind of acts, but at the same time, not having that external validation mm-hmm. has had an effect on me as a grown adult in feeling validated and feeling desirable, feeling sexy, believing someone when they say that they're attracted to you or that they find you this, that, or do you feel?
I feel exactly what you're saying. Like sometimes when I would have like really attractive friends being like, oh, this guy keeps bothering me. I was just like, I wish someone would bother me.
Right. Like, I wouldn't be bothered.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be bothered. I want someone to slide into my DMs. Like I, do you know, and I completely get it because yeah, being made to feel invisible your whole life can be detrimental. It makes you question your self-worth. It makes you feel like, wow, does everybody think that I'm just this gross creature just walking around the earth?
Right.
Like, it is really horrible. And like you said, it's difficult to talk about because it's like you don't want to seem as if you're supporting, you know, catcalling or things like that. But, and as much as we demonize, you know, needing external validation, because ultimately we don't, but sometimes a little is nice.
We do. I just think anyone who says they don't need external validation is lying.
No, they're lying.
Go through your life without any validation on how desirable you are and see how it feels. Like, I just think obviously, like, there's a happy medium. People would probably be like, there's a happy medium. I'd prefer, you know, to be only approached by attractive guys, but it's like, okay, but at least you have the option. You have 50% attractive, 50% not attractive. Mm. At least you're being, you know, like people are seeing you. Try literally being invisible.
Yeah.
And navigating that. They're navigating dating. They're navigating, you know, just like feeling yourself. And that's why I think I struggle with the word sexy.
Yeah.
Because I feel like people sort of go through their journey of, I don't know, their sexuality journey like starts in like secondary school and getting all of these like feelings and stuff. But when you're just invisible and it hasn't started from then,
yeah.
When is it supposed to start? Because then you get to an age where you're supposed to already know how you feel about yourself and like people only want someone who is confident or like someone who is comfortable in their sexuality. But it's like, I don't really have a chance to,
Yes. It's like you don't, it's like there was a point where it's like, okay, you're supposed to be at that point now. So if you start doing it, then it's a bit cringe, but it's like, but
right.
So yeah, I don't like using that word either. Cause I just feel like, no, that's not really me. I'm more just like, you know, cute or like goofy or whatever. It's still like your mind is trying to play catch up with your body almost.
Right.
And because you haven't gone through those experiences as a teenager and you've been made to feel invisible, it's like the things that people experience as teenagers and young adults, we're only experiencing now in our mid to late 20s, early 30s. So we have a lot of catching up to do when it comes to figuring out, or not figuring out, but leaning more heavily into our sexuality and what makes us feel good and how we feel in ourselves and our bodies. And these are things that a lot of people did because they had that validation and those experiences as like 13, 14, 15. Mm-hmm. A lot of us, well, I feel like some of us are doing it now in like our late 20s, early 30s. And so there's a weird kind of, disconnect there, not being able to really figure out what it means to be sexy or what it means to be attractive. And I understand when people kind of say things like, oh, but it sounds like you're complaining about not doing this, but it actually does, like you say, like having that validation, it actually does help. It can help with your self-esteem. The issue is when people lean too much on it and rely on nothing but external validation to prove themselves. But having a little bit here and there can help because it shows that people see you, like they see you, they appreciate you for what you are or what you look like and that kind of thing. Like, it always helps.
I definitely agree. I'm glad you got it because
definitely.
I didn't want to say it and then you're just like,
I definitely felt like that way as well. It's just like, yeah, sometimes I want someone to say that I look nice to you, you know?
Right. Okay, so let's pivot.
Uh-huh.
I want to talk about your soft launch.
Yes.
For your man. I want to let you explain the situation because basically it took a turn. You soft launching that you were in a relationship resulted in bizarre negativity from some of your followers.
Yes. So with, so I got into a relationship in January, and I always said, like, in the very rare event that I was ever in a relationship, I would never show anything. I would never show his face. I would never show anything like that. And to a degree, I've kind of sort of kept that, but I kind of like perhaps have a picture of us like maybe once every couple of months or so. But in that moment, I think because I was so, the whole situation was so new to me. It was very, I was very happy. I was very much like, oh man, like all this time, you know, on my blogs and things like that, I'm always talking about the pitfalls of dating and how trash it can be when you're plus size and stuff. And, you know, I never thought that I would ever get into a relationship. And I think, you know, before kind of getting into a relationship with him, I had already cut myself off of the thought of ever being in a relationship. Like, I was thinking about freezing my eggs. I was like, I'm just going to do life on my own. And if I want kids, I'm just going to do it on my own. Like, I was making steps to just doing that. And then that just came out of nowhere. And it was all very sweet and romantic and stuff. And so I think at the time that I posted the initial post, I was like really happy and just really in love. And, you know, it was all fresh and new. So I posted the image and then like a cute little caption or whatever. And to be fair, people were really lovely. So I got like really nice messages and things. But then halfway, like throughout the day, I started noticing, and I think in total, I received like 13 DMs. So I only showed one DM of the 13 from my followers, who basically the outline of the messages were, I'm going to unfollow you now because I don't feel like I can connect with you anymore. You've got, like, basically because I had a boyfriend, they didn't feel like they could tap into my misery or my frustration with being single and plus size. And they said that they couldn't relate to me because I was in a relationship. So they decided to very kindly, you know, slide into my DMs to announce their departure. And
it's not an airport, babes.
It's not an airport. It really isn't. Like, you don't need to tell me that. And and I was just like, wow, this is really strange. I found the whole situation really bizarre because it just felt like, okay, so these followers, were you only interested in my content when I was upset or when I was down or when I was depressed or talking about how terrible it is? It's almost felt like they were just leeching off of my pain. And the minute that I, you know, presented myself in a situation where I was happy, it was like they could no longer kind of use that as a way to make them feel themselves feel more superior than me, because the race of all of the women that contacted me were all the same, which I thought was also very interesting, considering the work that I do regarding, you know, talking about confidence and self-love and self-esteem and, you know, how that intersects with being Black. And, you know, since the whole George Floyd incident, where a lot of us online, you know, started doing a lot more advocacy, or we got bigger audiences. And so it became a thing where people were trying to learn from us. And it got to a point where it was like, I was starting to feel like somebody's mammy. I was starting to feel like I'm just here giving you free advice. Like, I'm literally teaching people how to not be racist all the time. It was for like 3 or 4 months after that happened with like the Black Lives Matter thing. It just felt like myself and a lot of other black creators were forced into these roles where we had to constantly provide emotional advice and support to people who just didn't understand why they couldn't say the N-word or couldn't say this, or why it was okay to have all white press events and things like that. So there was a lot of emotional trauma that a lot of us were carrying. And so some of those women who DM'd me, when I would scroll up the messages, were the same ones asking me, you know, to dedicate my time to telling them why being racist was not the right thing.
Please.
And I just found it was just interesting. It was interesting to me.
Do you feel like that situation is playing a part in why us as dark-skinned Black women feel the way that we do in terms of dating and desirability and, you know, joy within ourselves and being in a happy relationship? Do you feel like that was encouraging that that's not our place, and that our place is to be, you know, like
struggling. Porn.
Yeah, struggling, yes. Trauma porn, and like just educational and yeah. all those kind of things. Because I even made a post that was like, consume more Black joy, because I yeah. felt like...
We're not emotional support animals.
Right.
And that's what I feel like sometimes we're treated as.
Right.
And what I found interesting, what came into play, I found a bit more was... the colorism aspect. Mm. I think if my partner was dark skinned, I probably wouldn't have gotten as much engagement or as much maybe comments, because he's mixed race. There was an element of, oh my gosh, Steph, he's so attractive. How did you get him? Gosh, you must be so like you. And I remember one particular follower of mine who's always been a little bit too comfortable with stuff, because I don't know her from Adam, but she was like, oh, you must feel so like good about yourself that you're with a light-skinned Michael Ealy looking like. And I'm just like, first of all, he doesn't look like Michael Ealy. Don't tell him that, because it will just his head will just explode. But like, I was like, what is that? You think that my sense of ego and self-esteem would be inflated because I'm with someone that's mixed race? Like, that was wild to me. So I do think that there is not only like the not only us being dark skinned, but when you are with somebody that is of a lighter skin tone, there sometimes those questions of how did you get with her, or you know, oh, they're so attractive, like you must be so happy to be with someone that looks like that. Mm. I'm just like, so am I not worthy enough to be with? Like, yeah. To me, it was very funny.
I do feel like, well, what you've just said, like when you're with someone who is lighter, that there's the questions of like, you should be so this, that, and the other, or like they're really, I feel like because of my personal experiences, I put that on myself as well. Because I feel like that's something even that I've been going through in my current relationship, in like feeling like I'm punching because... she's more desirable. And that's obviously because of like how I feel about myself, but also how situations are. If we're out and about, the guys are hollering at her, or like she's getting moved to, or like celebrities are sliding into her DMs trying to be like, you're an 11 out of 10. Yeah. And I'm just here like,
it's like bread, though, like.
Yeah, but it's like.
It's so annoying.
I'm just saying,
it's annoying, yeah.
Because it's like, I don't want that interaction to go, for it to go anywhere, because I'm with her. So it's not like, I want people to slide into my DM so that I can get with them. No, it's just like, it just feels like a reinforced idea that I am less.
Less than.
Yeah, and it's so weird to be in the position where I've literally found the love of my life. I know she only wants to be with me. I know I only want to be with her, but it still hurts.
Why do you sound like me right now?
It still hurts.
You sound like me. I'm exactly the same, because I found myself sometimes like, I don't feel like I'm good enough, or I don't feel like, why are you with me? Why are you not with like another light-skinned girl kind of thing? Because there have been situations where me and him have gone out, and he gets chatted up all the time, or, you know, I've had people ask me for his Instagram so that they can follow him. I said, no, are you mad kind of thing? And so there is, you know, he is being, you know, mixed race. He has the desirability kind of element there for him. And there has been times when I have spoken to him about it, like, why are you with me? Like, I for the longest time, I kept trying to push him away because I just didn't think that I was worth it. And he caught onto that very early, and he's been trying, still to this day, trying to like reassure me and let me know like I'm the only one that he wants. But when you've been brainwashed, or like, you know, when you spent your whole life thinking that you're not worthy of love or desire or respect because of how you look, when somebody that is very conventionally attractive comes into your life and they're like, I want you, like your first response is why do you want me? Like everybody else has kept drumming into me my whole life that I'm not the one that they want because of how I look. So why is it that you, as somebody that is conventionally attractive, why are you choosing me? Like, is it a joke? Is it a fetish? Is it this? Is it that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I even convinced, I even said to him at one point, I think you've got a fetish for dark-skinned girls. And he was like, you're just pulling things out of your ass now. That's not the case. Like, I just like you.
Yeah, because if he didn't, then we'd be like, you're a colorist.
So. Yeah, exactly. And I just started trying to come up with every excuse as to why his like for me was fake. And I realized that was my self-esteem and my self-worth, like trying to tell me the best story that would make sense in my head. Because I couldn't and sometimes still can't make sense of why he likes me or why he's like attracted to me kind of thing. And like with you and Sky, like it reinforces when like when we go out or when we're amongst people and people pay more attention to him and it's just like, oh, so I'm just sitting here like bread. Like
it's also triggering because it's like, I mean, being in a relationship with a woman who is being the one that's being like hit on, it's triggering because it's like when I used to go out with my friends and like I would just be like, it's like I had the invisibility cloak on, like it's just like I wasn't there because it, but it feels worse because like that's my woman,
that's your, yeah.
And you're like stepping up and you're just gonna move to her in front of me, and what can I do? Because first of all, I'm also a woman and you're a guy, so I don't want to get punched in the face, but also like that's a woman. And like, I don't know, it's
wild.
It's, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot of layers there. Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a question I want to ask you. What is one apology that you've made in the past that you want to take back?
Ooh, one apology. The one apology that I can think of was in 2019, and I've spoken about this story at length, but I guess I left this little bit out because I didn't want to come across as more pathetic than I was made to be in the actual like story. But it was when I went out with someone and then I found out that they had gone out with me for a dare kind of thing. And I was emailed that information by the person's friend. And I actually did email back, like apologizing for like, oh, I'm sorry that I wasn't the right type for him kind of thing. I was cussing the guy out in the email, but then at the end, I was like, it's just really frustrating that this person has used me for this. And, you know, you guys made a bet to see who could sleep with like the fattest girl basically, and that ended up to be me, and I apologized for looking the way that I did, and I shouldn't have, but I think I was so low at that time after receiving that information that I automatically apologized on behalf or apologized for looking the way that I looked. And I wish that I hadn't had put that there. I should have just kept it to the cussing. But yeah, that's something that I do really regret, because at the end of the day in that situation, that guy was the one in the wrong. Like, and it took me a long time to not blame myself for all of the terrible or all of the bad or traumatic things that have happened that have been as a result of dating. A lot of the time I will tend to internalize it and blame me. Like, if I didn't look this way, then I wouldn't have half of the things happen to me. And that, I think, is... for me is an interesting perhaps trauma response, because I remember when the first time that I ever decided to tell my parents that I was getting bullied at school, and I did it when I was 15, and I had to, because when I came home I was like, I had gotten beaten up, so I came home looking just, there's blood everywhere, it was just really terrible, and like my dad asked me, you know, what's happened, and so I told him. And the first thing that he said was, maybe if you weren't so fat, you wouldn't have gotten bullied. And that is something I will always remember for the rest of my life. And that was what kind of triggered the sense of blame. So every time something bad happened to me, even though it was the other person's fault, I would automatically blame myself and then apologize for looking the way that I do. Like, as it's in, like it's an imposition to the other person. Like, it's, you know, so with that situation in 2019 with the guy that, you know, was paid to sleep with me or whatever, which is a weird kind of really weird situation, I apologized, and now I really wish I could take that back.
I remember that I think there was an article, or it was your blog post.
No, I wrote an article because he got paid. So I was like, okay, if you're going to get paid by your friends, I'm going to get paid by writing about it as well. We'll both exploit the situation.
Yeah, no, that's how I found your page. And I was just, I couldn't even believe that that was a real story. And yeah. I'm just sorry that that happened to you, and that it's a trauma response to you is to apologize. But I hope this is a chance to reclaim that apology and just take it back and be like, no, actually, fuck you. Like, I don't need to apologize for for the way that I look, because I am just unapologetically here. Mm-hmm. This is who I am.
Absolutely. We move.
I am desirable.
Yeah. I'm still trying to work on that. I'm still trying to, like, it's interesting, because when you have that kind of position of advocacy, you're always trying to encourage others to live their best lives. But then sometimes it's like you'll have those moments where it's like, actually, I don't feel like I'm that desirable, or I don't feel like I'm that. But in the landscape that we're in with, like, body positivity and stuff, and like toxic positivity, it's like you can't let your guard down sometimes, or you can't say that actually I'm having a really shit day today, because then people will jump on you. They'll be like, oh, so you're not body positive anymore. And it's like, I am, but body positivity, or what it was supposed to be, you know, is to acknowledge that you are going to have good days and you are going to have bad days, and that's okay. Like, you don't have to be positive about yourself every single time, because then it puts a lot of pressure on ourselves to have to be positive and happy and jolly, when sometimes, because we are humans that exist and are sociable, and sometimes we can see things that trigger us, there are going to be days where we might just be like, oh, I just, you know, feel a bit like shit today. But I think as long as you can acknowledge that you're in that you're feeling that, and just say, do you know what, tomorrow will be a better day, or in 3 days time I'll have a better day, I'm just going to feel how I'm feeling and just know that it is not a part of my story right now. So as long as you can acknowledge and process that, and just know that this is not your permanent state of thinking, then it's fine to have those emotions, because we're all human. But sometimes it's like I'll say, oh, you know, we're all desirable, we're all this, and then there'll be a day where I wake up and I'm like, ugh, I just want to go back to bed. I don't feel
desirable. It's tiring. Desirable. Like, it's tiring. I just think, also, it's not a reflection on you not believing in what you say anymore. It's just being tired on the situation that is at hand, because it's like the same thing with being black. Like, I wouldn't change being black. I wouldn't change being dark skinned for the world. Sometimes I'm just tired of the way that I get treated because of it. That's the same thing with, like, everything else. It's like, it's not my issue, it's your issue that's pissing me off. Like, the fact that it's your issue.
Exactly.
So, yes. Well, thank you so much for having this chat with me, babe. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm so glad that we've finally been able to do it. Is there anything that you want to plug whilst you're here?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. Like, I feel like this is a conversation that we could just over wine, just keep going and going, because there's so many more levels to discuss. But no, thank you so much for having me on. And to plug just me on Instagram, I guess. So my Instagram is at Stephanie Yeboah, and that's the name of my blog page as well. I've got a podcast that's out now called Storytime with Stephanie.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Say It With Your Chest. If you're loving the conversations that we're having, make sure to rate us 5 stars and to leave a review wherever you're watching or listening right now. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe to all things Say It With Your Chest, and make sure you follow Girls Who Are Boys on Instagram and TikTok to know when the next episode will drop. See you next time. Insanity Group.